A few months ago, North Korea threatened to strike Guam. Today, promises of peace. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. In a historic moment, North and South Korea have pledged they will never fight another war. Leaders of both nations signed a joint statement agreeing to pursue complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and formally end the Korean War. The meeting's positive tone sent shares up on the South Korean stock market, but many analysts remain skeptical. The BBC's Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani reports.
It looks almost too good to be true. A compliant, accommodating North Korea, willing to negotiate and put on the table what everyone wants, peace and complete denuclearization. Markets in the region reacted to the news, with shares in Seoul and elsewhere moving slightly higher. The prospect of a conflict on the Korean Peninsula has been felt keenly in Asia over the last year or so, and investors have become nervous over Pyongyang's nuclear capability and the U.S.'s increasingly hostile tone. But analysts say it's too soon to celebrate, and while the talks themselves are historic, it's not clear yet exactly what denuclearization means.
The BBC's Karishma Vaswani. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is in Washington today to meet with President Trump. One of the president's criticisms of Germany, Europe's largest economy, is that it doesn't spend more on defense. NATO member nations have committed on paper to spend 2% of their gross domestic product on defense, but most countries have fallen short of that target. Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
Germany spent about 1.2% of its GDP on defense last year. Like all NATO countries, it's committed to move towards hitting 2% by 2024. Jeff Rathke is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Germany is the second largest economy within NATO after the United States. That would be an additional 30 billion euros per year.
The U.S. spends about 3.5% of GDP on defense. Germany is a bit behind the curve, but James Dobbins at the Rand Corporation says Germany's lower spending is partly a reaction to its militarism in World War II and partly because it wasn't a big colonial player.
Germany is a anti-militaristic society as a result of its historic experience. It doesn't have defense obligations in Africa, in the Middle East, the way Britain and France do.
But Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014 was a wake-up call. Since then, Rathke says, Germany has hiked military spending by about 17%. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.7%. NASDAQ futures are up 0.2%. Dow and S&P futures are down in the 2 to 3 tenths percent range, with the Dow future down 76 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.97%. One of the prevailing narratives used to explain what motivated voters in the 2016 presidential election boils down to economic frustration, specifically that many Americans, and manufacturing especially, were left behind by a fast-changing global economic order and that they lashed out at politicians who'd ignored them. Our next guest argues that narrative is wrong, or at least incomplete. Diana Mutz is author of a recent study on this that analyzed survey data going back 6 years. She's a political science professor and director of the Institute for the Study of Citizens and Politics at the University of Pennsylvania.
The kind of loss of manufacturing jobs that people use often to explain this were really things that happened long before the last 10 years. And that's indeed what we find. During this period of time, most people were doing better. And even those who weren't those who were turning to Trump for help.
If it's not economic anxiety and anger over loss of jobs or loss of manufacturing, what do you argue the election was all about?
I think the election, in terms of, you know, who changed their votes, the election was really about feeling one's group status was threatened. And I don't mean that people necessarily would tell you that in those words, but we ask people a variety of different questions. You know, some are issue specific, like the issue of international trade. How much threat do they perceive from China? Is the American way of life threatened, or to what extent do you feel it is? And so it's definitely the members of what we think of as dominant groups in our society, whites and men in particular, who feel a greater sense of threat. And it's those folks who feel that threat most prominently who are likely to switch from having voted a Democrat in the past to voting for Trump in 2016.
What do you hope that your analysis helps us understand? What are, say, politicians or policymakers supposed to make of this?
I think the problem with the whole left behind thesis is it's not really what drove the outcome. And that doesn't mean by any means that there aren't people who are left behind, that there aren't people negatively affected by the changes that trade has wrought in the American economy. So certainly, I'm not saying don't pay attention to those things, but the kind of threat that people feel is far more of a symbolic than a pocketbook threat. And I think it's reassurance about the status of Americans in the global economy, for example, that will help policymakers to enable the public to respond to things other than simply being fearful.
Diana Mutz is a political science professor and director of the Institute for the Study of Citizens and Politics at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Mutz, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks so much.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer is Brian Allison. Our other engineer is Jake Gorski. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.